Welcome to Code Life. It is your host, Jerome Parker, aka Master Shake, the only tech podcast that delves into the everyday aspects of computer scientists. Today, on our first inaugural broadcast, we have Blinster, a fellow engineer who is from the Louisville, Kentucky area, all around amazing, wonderful guy. Blinster, thank you for being our first guest this and our guinea pig. Why don't you introduce yourself to the audience and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thanks for having me. My name is Ben Hibben, aka the Blinster, and I am a maker, inventor, nerd, engineer, whatever, living here in Louisville, Kentucky, making all sorts of fun stuff in the evenings and lying to refrigerators for a living during the day.
So, how did you get started in the tech, and what are you currently doing now?
So I am, to give a more serious answers to what I do for work, I am a software quality assurance automation engineer, and it is my job to take an appliance brain in this particular instance, because I work for an appliance manufacturing company here in Louisville, and load firmware onto it, and then create the entire hardware and software interface to talk to it as if it were actually an appliance, but instead of being connected to an actual appliance, it's a brain in a jar, and I am simulating all of its inputs.
Okay, so like, for example, yeah, like one of those smart refrigerators with the touchscreen panel, and you're like making your ice and stuff like that. You're like simulating those actions and running the test case.
My first week on the job, I spent the entire time making simulated ice on a simulated ice maker, just figuring out how the hardware worked and how the test tools worked and how I was going to end up working with them. Very pleased to say that I joined based on the recommendation of one of my friends at the Level 1 Hackerspace, a local 501c3 educational nonprofit I volunteer at and have volunteered at for, oh, good grief, 8-9 years now. He knew I was smart and could be trained, and they needed people that could learn a programming language called LabVIEW, which is not very well supported in our area. So they're just looking for people who know enough about microcontrollers and programming to be able to be trained. Got started there, and now I'm one of the top three architect devs for building the tools that people use to do the actual testing. We've got a bunch of people that just do software tests. You know, they pick up a ticket from the devs. They make sure it works. They make sure you can't break it. You got to put on your thinking cap and think, what would a little asshole 7-year-old do to this thing? Would they press the button 50 times as fast as they could? And you got to see if the firmware will do something it shouldn't, or if it'll shrug that off. And so it is, it's a very interesting job. I get a lot of, I spend half my time going, what in the, and writing code and, you know, doing all the fun. Why is the thing not doing the thing I told it to do? Oh, I didn't tell it to do it the right way. That comes with software development. And then the rest of the time I'm like, well, I got 20 minutes to wait for this thing to do. I'm gonna read an article on something and learn something new.
That reminds me of my time as an embedded engineer at GE. So so you say you use, what was it called, LabVIEW?
I do a lot of LabVIEW and TestStand, and I try to solve as many problems as I can in Python because it's a very powerful tool. But my boss and our general department, they are not as familiar with Python, so there's a lot of pushback. But I'm like, you know, this problem is 5 lines in Python or an hour in LabVIEW. I mean, don't get me wrong, LabVIEW is a very powerful tool and it's fantastic at certain types of problem solving. But, you know, it's designed more for interfaces than for doing some of the simpler, like string manipulation. There are just some things that are just easier to do in a more traditional language, at least for me, having a stronger background. in that sort of stuff. I started writing code in elementary school in BASIC, and then did web development for many years, and then worked my way up to jacuzzi.com and goarmy.com. did some, you know, national work, and then got burned out on doing websites and decided to pursue engineering instead.
Nice. So you said you started off with BASIC, then you went to web dev, and now you're doing like more, I guess, embedded work.
Yep.
What made you choose embedded over web or mobile or et cetera?
Hanging out at the Level 1 Hackerspace here in Louisville and learning about Arduino. And, you know, if you're not familiar, the Arduino is a microcontroller for dummies sort of program, which is great. It means I can use microcontrollers now. And instead of having to learn the relatively steep learning curve of embedded development, where you mentioned you did some, you know, when you want to talk to a pin, you've got to actually write a register word to a register with all with various bits in it. Right. So if there's a 4-bit register to turn on one of the lines, you have to write all 4 bits. But you don't have to know that to work in Arduino. If you want to turn a line on, it's digital write, line number, and then high. So that gives people like myself an excellent introduction into how to make microcontrollers sing and dance and react to the world. And from there, you start to, if you get deeper into it, you can start to outgrow the Arduino framework and start working with raw C yourself and learn all sorts of really interesting things. So that's where I basically was falling out of love of doing web development and finding it harder and harder to progress professionally there, because I had 20 years of experience and nobody wants to pay for that. You know, lots and lots of code camps are out there cranking lots of people out into the workforce, which is absolutely fantastic. And I encourage it. And I volunteered at several of them to, you know, help teach. But it also means that job market was getting really, really crowded. Mm-hmm. And nobody wanted to pay for someone with that kind of experience. And even if I was looking for work below my experience level, people were telling me I was overqualified. So it was definitely time for a change.
I feel you. So speaking of the current, you know, job market climate and code camps, et cetera, what are your thoughts on how things are going with the whole code camp movement? Do you feel like the quality and quantity are matching up? By, I guess what I'm saying is, do you feel like these code camps are do you believe they're selling a dream, or do you believe that they're actually doing what they're promising that they're what they're going to do?
That's an interesting question. I believe in it enough to volunteer at a few. Some of them are less reputable than others. It's definitely something I think anyone who's interested in doing should pursue. It's one of those things that can get your feet wet. And this is one of those industries where self-study is pretty much constant. Mm. The framework that you used last year is no longer the hot new thing that people are hiring for or want in their website, because buzzword bingo or whatever is going on. And so there's continuous learning. So with that in mind, if you're interested in that process and don't mind the continuous learning and can do the hustle, then you can put together a portfolio and get good work. And it is a lot easier path out of a bad situation than many others. That said, there are definitely places out there that are promising that they can teach you in 6 weeks, you know, to get a job that'll pay, you know, $50,000 a year or whatever. And that's not realistic.
Yeah. That's been my problem with a lot of them, is that they're that I feel like they're selling a pipe dream. Like, you know, they'll use the someone who, you know, did get a high paying job, but then you look deep into the background, they've already been coding. They went to a boot camp before. You know, they worked at their uncle's firm. You know, it's there's a lot of marketing around it that I just morally don't agree with, which just kind of makes me weary of all of them from the jump. Not to say, now I do know that there are some really good ones out there, but I'm like you said, the key word self-education is very paramount. And like that's really the make it or break it is, you know, are you going to be able to, in my opinion anyway, and I'm biased because that's the route that I took. So, but you know, if you're not willing to do self-study and like ultimately like break things and fix it on your own, you're not really going to progress. And going to a boot camp, whether you go to a boot camp or not, you know, it's not going to help you. And you can't really, and you can't teach that at a boot camp. You can't, that's not something you can teach. Something you just have to do.
And it's important to realize that these programs are cranking out, you know, 10 or 20 students at a time continuously over and over and over again, which means you're going to have a lot of competition for entry-level work, which means you're going to have to be able to shine. So it might be worth thinking about sticking into accessibility or mobile-centric development or ad-specific development, although I don't recommend going into ad development. It's still offshored heavily. But that sort of stuff can give you a foothold where they say, all right, we need somebody who can do X, and you can do X really well, and you have a strong portfolio in that. That'll help you separate yourself from the crowd of everyone else who's willing to work.
That is an excellent point. This is why I always tell people, you know, having a solid portfolio, you know, and doing side projects is key, because you have to be able to, you know, distinguish yourself. And let's see, back on to your, I'm interested because you said you learned BASIC and then you went to web development. So can you talk about your transition, like how you started learning coding? What was your path like? And why BASIC?
All right, well, I'm somewhat old. I'm life, the universe, and everything old. 42, for those of you who haven't read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy yet. And I saw my first computer when I was 12, so 30 years ago. And I said, that is my ticket out of poverty. I grew up in a very poor home. We did not have much in the way of resources. I know what it's like to skip eating for 3 days because there isn't much food. I've eaten rice and ketchup because that's what was left. And so I, even at that young age, was thinking of ways to escape that prison that poverty is. I saw a computer at a friend's house first time and saw my first computer graphics at that time, dot matrix, printout of Vader's helmet and an F-16 profile, and was immediately in love. Started trying to get a hold of them anywhere I could to play with them. I couldn't afford to get a programming language or anything compiled or books or anything like that. So BASIC was what was available on Apple IIe's and such. It came with it. And so there was just a lot of figuring out how things worked and trial and error, stuff like that. I found an IBM program somebody had written that was very densely written, most densely written BASIC program I'd seen in my life. And I had to unpack it into lines and figure it out. And they're doing things like peeking and poking into video memory, which I learned from and was able to later, because I'm a giant nerd, use to make or start to make my first computer game, which was going to be a Star Trek game, because giant nerd. But yeah, so played with that for a long time, mostly at school, because that's where the computers were. And eventually, a friend of mine came up to me in high school and was like, hey, you're good at computers and you're good at art. They've got this graphics program, computer graphics thing at the vocational school. You should go check that out. So I walked over to the vocational school down in Bullitt County, which is next to the Bullitt Central High School campus, which is where I was living at the time, and or where I was going to school at the time. And I talked to the teacher, and he was already booked, overbooked by like four or five students, I forget. But he was impressed, and he got me in anyway. And from there, I started to learn 3D animation, multimedia, and a little bit of web development and vector art and all that fun stuff, Photoshop. Back when they added layers as a feature, because I'm old. And yeah, from there, I found that I had an absolute love of web, making pretty things on the computer. Then I went to college, and did not go super well for me. I had never had to study before. High school was a time when I just stopped reading my pleasure reading and read my textbooks for a couple of weeks and then showed up for tests. So I just had no concept of how to study or do work for learning in a more rigorous environment. My first year of college did not go very well as a result, and ended up changing from electrical engineering, which was what I wanted my major to be, back to web development, because I already had a foothold in that and it was easy. And from there, just dozens and dozens and dozens of websites.
Okay. So your degree is in web development formally?
I have an Associate of Applied Sciences in Computer Graphic Design from Louisville Technical Institute, which I think is now Sullivan. College of Design and Engineering. And to be honest, I don't necessarily recommend that school. They counted placement at McDonald's as a successful job placement. And of my graduating class, I think two of us got work in the industry. And between the two of us, I think I lasted in the industry longer than he did, because I was doing it for 20 years.
Yeah, that's when my mom went to school. And, you know, she had a success story, but, you know, more people didn't. So that's interesting. That's cool. So what, I know that you run a repair shop. Do you do that inside of Level One?
Oh yeah. So Level One is a 501c3 educational nonprofit. Our mission is to help people make cool shit, and to do that and keep the barrier of entry as low as possible. We're free and open to the public anytime a member is present. At Level One, it's a member-driven organization. The officers are there mostly for the technicality of the state requirements, and not necessarily for, like, the president is only nominally in charge of the space. The members are in charge of the space. And as members, we're encouraged to do things in our community that we think are cool and exciting and helpful and beneficial. And I have done a variety of various programs at the space over the years. And a couple of years ago, there's that video going around Facebook about the repair cafe movement in Europe. And people kept saying, we should make one here in Louisville. And like, we got one. We got a free space. Anyone can come in and use tools called Level One. All you got to do is sign a waiver, and you can come in and use a $3,000 cabinet saw or, you know, any hand tools. We've got all sorts of tools. You can fix all your stuff there. And they're like, the response I got back most commonly was, great, when's a good time? And I was like, oh, hell, I'm there on Friday nights. Friday night's usually bad movie night, and there's a bunch of us hanging out in an informal, just, you know, nerd get together, working on stuff. So I was like, all right, Friday nights. So I started hosting Fix It Friday at the space on Friday nights, and people would bring in broken mechanical typewriters, a saxophone at one point, a couple of PS4s that needed HDMI ports repaired or replaced on them, several computers, a couple of TVs, usually with bad backlights or a bad power supply, fans, an antique clock, a vacuum cleaner, you know, all sorts of stuff. And, you know, just, I love fixing things. I've been taking stuff apart since I was a kid. And so this has been a great way to give back and to help teach people what's inside the stuff they own and keep things out of the landfill.
Man, that's awesome. So what do you like to do for fun outside of the code, outside of working on tech stuff?
I like to make things with my hands. I'm actually up at my parents' house in my dad's shop. My dad is a master craftsman knife maker, Daryl Hibben, Daryl Hibben Knives. My uncle is one of the most famous knife makers in the world, Gil Hibben of Gil Hibben Knives. And so I grew up in shops seeing stuff being made and, you know, fixing stuff ourselves because, you know, too poor to buy a new one. We got to fix this one. I've been up here polishing a katana blade that I got from a friend who I've done a number of favors for. And he was like, this is a good gift for you. So he got me an unfinished blade, and I've been spending some time up here doing some work to finish it. But beyond that, I enjoy driving. I enjoy talking philosophy and teaching people. I enjoy spreading kindness on the internet, which is my big kick these days, trying to normalize the idea that people should be kind to each other, that it's okay for men to talk about their feelings and you know, that it's a good thing if people are compassionate and considerate of each other.
I love that.
That's my main passion these days.
All right. So how can people get a hold of you? Where can they find you?
I'm on Twitter at Blenster. Pretty much you type in Blenster, B-L-E-N-S-T-E-R, into Google and hit enter. You're going to find my various social media profiles.
Okay. Cool.
I don't like the term SEO expert because it's, you know, black magic. And most of the people who claim to be an expert at that are snake oil salesmen. to put it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
There's a knowing laugh. But I will say that I'm ridiculously easy to find.
Good. All right, cool. So Blenster on Twitter. Is there anything else that you would like to say before we close out the podcast?
Be kind to each other and don't stop learning.
Be kind to each other and don't stop learning. Well, thanks, Blenster. We appreciate everything. Everyone who is listening, thank you for listening to this first podcast of Code Life. We would like to thank our sponsor, Triple Byte. If you head over to the show notes, you'll be able to see a link to Triple Byte. Triple Byte helps programmers find great companies to work at. They'll go through a technical interview with you, match you with companies that are looking for people with your specific skill sets, and then fast track you through their hiring process. That sound good? Well, make sure that you take that code quiz that's in the show notes and get started. 100% free, everyone. But it is your host, Jerome Parker, aka Master Shake. And once again, this has been the inaugural episode of the Code Life Podcast. We will see you next week.